Welcome to another episode of Threads of Enlightenment. As usual, it is my honor to welcome our guests because I know that they're coming with a couple of things very expensive. That is their time, a precious commodity. I'm going to say this until the last episode of this podcast because I want you guys to understand the value of your time. 24 hours has been given to every man, every being on this planet. What we do with our 24 hours will tell us a lot about you, but also you have to learn a few things about time. You have to learn to honor her, respect. You have to learn to love her and cherish it. It becomes precious because you will have a kid and then one day you're like, wow, they're 18, 20, and they're gone. That is time. The other is the journey. The journey is one of the most powerful things. It created the individual that is before us. It houses all kinds of stuff that we're going to delve into so that we can gain wisdom and understanding as we have this wonderful deep conversation with Christy as she's here with us at Threads of Enlightenment. Thank you for coming and spending those precious commodity with us here.
Thank you, Ken. It's already been a joy just meeting you before the show and getting to know you. So thank you for having me.
You are welcome. One of the questions that I always ask, how do you serve mankind? I try to tell people, do the best to get here. It's intoxicating. So how do you serve mankind?
I love the question, and what a treat it is. The way that I serve mankind is I work with women, predominantly married women, who are at a difficult place in their marriage. It could just be kind of dry and need some new life in it, or it could be in crisis where a husband has left or has said he doesn't love her anymore or is involved with another woman. Anywhere along that spectrum, I help wives who are unhappy or bored to become ridiculous.
I said that to Christy. I love her tagline that they have about her, ridiculously happy. And so I was just excited about meeting a wife that is ridiculously happy. So this is going to be a good conversation. So one of our customs is to go back in this beautiful time machine that they call memory. And we go and visit some of those spaces that we spend our time there. One of them, the family, is the first location. And we reside there for a little while until we begin our personal journey from the family, if you will. What was your family like?
That's a great question. My father was raised in the Christian church, and my mother was raised actually in the Catholic church. And so when they came together, there was no agreement. He didn't want to go to her church and she didn't want to go to his church. So we did not go to church at all. But my parents were happily married. They had a lot of affection and love in the household, a lot of common interests. So my dad was more of a go to work and come home and, you know, relax at the house. My mom was much more social. She wanted to be out doing things and being around people. And so I noticed from an early age that she did that. She did what made her happy. She went out and played bridge and she joined women's groups and things like that. And she was not angry for him, for who he was. She accepted him for who he was. And she still continued to do the things that made her happy. But
that is awesome.
So I may have been in church, you know, a handful of times in my childhood. And that was if I spent the night with a friend, right? And their family to church. And when I did that, when I went to church with a friend, it was always a very confusing situation. Like, what's going on here? What's happening? Well, my friends that I went with to church were bored, saw no value in the experience because it was an every week have to go thing for them. And so when I would ask them questions like, what's the deal? You know, who is God? What's this all about? They were taking it for granted because it was an expectation at their house where it was fascinating to me. You know, and it is funny how we take things for granted because the other thing that I compare it to from my childhood is piano lessons, Ken. I did not have the
privilege. I want to hear this one.
I did not have the privilege to play the piano growing up. We did not have a piano at my house. We did not have money for piano lessons. And so I thought that was just the bomb, right? To be able to take piano lessons and learn piano. But all of my friends that had to take piano lessons hated it, yes. right? So I would go to their house and say, oh, teach me what you learned in your piano lesson today. Well, they thought of it as a duty and a chore and a negative thing because their parents were forcing it on them. But I thought it was a treat. I thought it was a privilege. Yeah. So it's funny how those things work. What we have, we don't maybe appreciate sometimes. And the person who doesn't have that is like, oh, have that.
I love it. But I love your analogy of that. It's just perfect. So here you are in this family and the vast difference in belief system with mom and dad and how mom related to your dad is absolutely brilliant because it shows those around that acceptance and allowing someone to be is very important and that one shouldn't impose, if you will, your beliefs and all those other things, your expectations along with your belief is what some of the things that damages relationships. So you are there, you had a chance, you're when you step out of home and go around that. As this curious girl begins to hang out a little more, did the subject of God and relationship of God, did it come in any other way as you're outside curious as you're spending time with your friends over the years?
You know, surprisingly, no. I look back now, I see all of the campus outreach programs that are on the different college campuses and things like that. And I went through 4 years of college. And as far as I can remember, no one ever invited me to an event like that. No one ever talked about it. And I guess I got into the crowd that was not following the Lord. It really, in those college years, it really turned into a non-issue. Nobody was talking about the Lord that I was around. And yeah, so I wasn't hearing anything. And so I began to believe the lie that it was too late for me, that I had missed the window of coming to know the Lord, that those things happen when you're young and you go to children's church and you go to vacation Bible school and you learn through that whole process. And now I'm too old and it's too late for me. So might as well forget about that. And besides, I'm drinking and I'm going to parties and I'm doing these things. So God probably doesn't want anything to do with me anyway.
Isn't that a wonderful thing that we say to ourselves, a story that we say to ourselves? But when we read the book, we see that he was hanging out with prostitutes and the bad boys. He was hanging out there. And I guess that's where the fun is. And that's where I think those people that are there, when they have an encounter with him, it's not fake. And when they make the change, those are the type of folks, the Bible calls them the foolish things of the earth. Yes. And God will take those. And he said he will confound the wise. And so I count myself as one of those damn fools, as I would say. So here you are, you went to college. What field in your college days, I mean, when you're heading to college, when those thoughts were coming into your space in your mind, why did you pick the field that you picked and what college did you pick?
Okay. Well, you know, I need to back up for 1 minute because one of the most important things that happened to me happened right before my senior year of high school. And that was that out of the clear blue sky, my dad came home and said he wanted a divorce. Right out of the clear blue. We had no idea. Well, he had gotten involved with another woman and it had been 21 years of marriage. And like I said, happy marriage. There wasn't fighting and things like that going on, but we did have a separation during a point where my father had to go away to look for work. And so he went away. And of course, this is the days of long distance, right? We didn't have cell phones. So it cost a lot of money to make those long distance calls and everything. But he went away to find work and he did. But he got involved with another woman. And so by the time we sold the house where we were and moved, things were already in a mess. Well, I was a junior in high school, so I was very self-centered and concerned with how am I going to get acclimated in this new school and make friends and all of these things. So I wasn't really paying attention to what was happening in the family. And my older brother had already left for college, so it was just me in the household. And, you know, halfway through the year at Christmas time, my dad comes home and says that he's leaving. My mom was, you know, as you might imagine, a basket case. And it was just a very painful, awful time. And I tell people that pain of that divorce continues to this day for me, right? I still have divorced parents that make things difficult. And so I think that is what, you know, instigated for me the passion for marriage and for family. And it started right then. But before that passion started, a bitterness came in that said, I will never get married. I will never trust my life to a man. I will always make my own money and make my own way and all of that. Because my mom had never worked. She did not know how to take care of us, how to support us, how to get us a place to live. I mean, it was a real tragedy in our lives.
Wow. I can, you know, as you're telling the story, you can feel that, imagine the pain, and on the holidays as well, when everyone should be cheerful and so forth, to bring those news and then cause a serious trauma to the family and your mom. When that took place, that genesis took place, and you moved into college, I could see, as you state, the internal, and I tell people this all the time, and I say it because it was my hope that they would get what I'm saying, that we make decisions from two areas of our being, the natural mind, and, you know, that's reacting. But the soul of the man, the inside, when he makes a decision, things happen. We begin to bear fruit from it. And I always try to educate my audience. Life is a series of those type of decisions, whether you know it or not. So here you are, you made this decision, and I remember your pursuit was to go into the arena by which now you're going to make sure that you're not able to rely on any man. So when you got there into this new programming arena, if you will, into the educational system, what field of study did you pick?
Mm-hmm. Well, I had a very precise way of deciding on my major, and that was my sophomore year. I went to the University of Kentucky. I live in Kentucky now. And my sophomore year, the guidance counselor called me in and said, you have to choose a major. And I said, I have no idea what I want to do. And she said, you have to choose a major. And I said, what's the major with the least amount of math? Because I hate it. And she said, communications. And I said, I'll take it. It's the truth. My dad, growing up, it's funny the messages that you get, right? My dad used to say, I don't care if you study underwater basket weaving. You go to college and you get the piece of paper. So yeah. I don't care what the degree is. So she said, communications. I said, that sounds great. I'm already a professional.
So as you are in this new arena of programming and you are being programmed to be a communicator, what did you learn about yourself in relation to communicating?
That's really interesting. You know, I had no idea what I wanted to do with that degree. I just knew I needed to make lots of money so that I didn't have to depend on anybody, right? So I'm being raised in the culture that's saying, you know, women's rights. And I've seen the pain that my mom has gone through. So I'm very, you know, independent, strong woman kind of thing. And then I'm without God. So yeah. You can imagine what that whole thing looks like. And I had no intentions of getting married. So that's kind of where I was in college. And you know, it's funny, you mentioned the folks in the Bible, right? The prostitutes and the people like that. I didn't know those people were in the Bible. Right? The most I had ever looked at the Bible was to read Genesis 1 about 1,000 times growing up, because yeah. I thought it was a book that you read from beginning to end, like every other book I knew. And yeah. So I would read Genesis 1, not understand a word of it, and close it in, you know, exasperation. And so I had no idea. I thought the people in the Bible were all perfect, and that was how they got to be there.
That's right? Beautiful, but it's full of murderers and cheats and killers and all that stuff.
But you know, the enemy wanted to keep me away from it.
Yeah.
He wanted me to know that there was a place for me.
Yeah, Moses was a murderer, you know. Saul was a mass murderer. He was killing tons of Christians. And yet God had compassion. And so that's why I say to people, you got to love your enemy. Yes. Oh my God, can come down and talk to this man who's killing all of his people and looking and says, why are you killing me? Why are you hurting me?
Yeah.
And he turned out to be one. That's why I say God goes into those areas where people are the most damaged, and he brings them out because he specializes in taking damage packaged goods, if you will, and beautifying them.
Yes.
And those of you that are out there broken and messed up and all the other things that we put as the label, there, the Bible says that God is close to those who have a broken heart.
Yes.
So if you're in a mess, he's right there. And you just have to realize that. So don't allow...
And who is not in a mess? Let's do it.
And so he specializes in it. And so that's why not go to someone who specializes in it so that he can assist you in becoming free from where you're at. It's nothing like it. So here you are, you're in college, getting your independence on and still doing your stuff. You said you're partying and all that stuff and you're moving through life. I'm never going to get married. I love those things because I said a couple of those and life had different plans for me. So here you are, you've made your declaration as a kid, as a young person, and you're in school gaining your knowledge and you have gained your knowledge. And now you're looking forward to go into the next phase of one's programming, which we call the professional lifestyle. You're going in a job, girl. And so you're going into this field as you're gaining your studies about communications and so forth, and you realize some of the things that you've seen about yourself. As you're moving through your life, what were you thinking around that time? Christy, what was your thought life like as far as who you were and to yourself and then relations to the devastating news? Because that will always be in that mind and reside there. What was happening?
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, I think my primary concern was getting that degree in order to make a lot of money, to be successful, right? What I had grown to think of as success, and to be able to be independent, to be able to support myself, to not have to depend on anybody. And so, but in the midst of that, about halfway through college, I met my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not, the interesting thing is I did not know the Lord then. My husband did not know the Lord then. And yet, as I look back, I see the Lord's hand all over that matchup, because he was not my type. I was not immediately attracted to him. He actually worked at a tire store and I had to take my car in to get worked on. And I told my roommate, I said, if I flirt with this guy, he's going to give me a good deal, right? Because I didn't have any money. And so I did. I flirted with him. He gave me a good deal and he asked me out on a date. I wrote a full description of him on the back of his business card and gave it to my roommate and said, if I'm not home by midnight, call the cops. And the reason was, this is hilarious. The reason was I was convinced he was a lot older than me, because he had a mustache and a full-time job. He's actually 2 years older than me.
That is so funny. Okay, so here you are. You made a promise to yourself and you break this promise because this guy asked you out. And when he did that and asked you out and you got back in time and you didn't need to call the cops, what happened after that?
I enjoyed the date. He did have a full-time job, which was way different than any of the other boys I had been going out with, right? Who were college students. So he actually had money. And I said, our very first date, we went to a concert and he bought me a concert t-shirt, which those are worth their weight in gold. And he bought me a margarita while we were at the concert. I said, this guy's loaded.
The huge concert. Oh, was it really?
In Cincinnati. Yeah, it was an outdoor concert. And we had a great time. And I thought he was a really nice guy. But I told my roommate, but he's not my type. I'm not really attracted to him.
Yeah.
And but he kept pursuing me. He kept asking me out. And so I would go out again and again. And I kept saying, I'm not attracted to him. I'm not attracted to him, until he, I don't know, third, fourth, fifth date, somewhere along there, he kissed me. And I said, oh, I'm attracted. So our kids now make a joke out of it. We have 3 daughters and a son. And my daughters say, oh, so we're just supposed to go around kissing boys to find the one that we're attracted to.
That's a beautiful love story, by the way. You know, so that's awesome. How many years ago was that?
So we were together for 2 years before we got married. And we are going to celebrate our 30th anniversary in May, which feels like unbelievable, really. Unbelievable.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. So here you are. You've met this man and you guys got married. You're still in school or you're out of school?
I finished school and then we got married the next year. Yeah.
Yeah. So you finished school. He has money. He's a lot. He's
make $10 or $12 an hour.
And you now have just graduated. First of all, how did it feel to graduate? Because you, as an individual, a young girl, made some decisions about that. You're going to make them. You're going to get the degree, and then you're going to go make your money and be rich. So, how did you feel when you graduated and you received that paper that your dad has always been telling you to make sure you get this piece of paper?
I think I felt really proud and accomplished, and at the same time, a little disillusioned, like, this isn't what I expected. I thought I would be smarter. I feel like I had a job interview once, and the interviewer asked me, what did you learn from going to college? And I said, nothing from the classroom. I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about responsibility and maturity and growing up and life. But the classroom, not much that I carry with me, you know, to this day. So today I would say with our kids, we don't push college the way my parents did. In my parents' world, that was the way for your success. You've got to go to college and get that piece of paper. I don't feel that way today. My husband did not graduate from college and he's done wonderful as an entrepreneur. So I feel much more open to different possibilities with my own children.
Yeah, I told my kids, college is just one way.
Yes.
It is not the only way.
Yes.
There are other ways to get to where you need to be. And so I would always tell them to my youngest, who's a really interesting young man. So he came to me one day and he said, I'm not going to college. And I said, well, you know, what do you think? I said, what is your reasoning behind that? And he said, well, you know, I've been looking at everyone else and looking at the tuition costs and all of the different things. And he said, I cannot put myself in debt for a piece of paper that I'm not really going to learn anything from. He said, I'm going to go out and make my own and I'm not going to be in debt like that. And that was his reasoning. And I couldn't argue with him. I'm like, makes sense.
Yes.
And he found his route through entrepreneurship. College and education is just one way. And so it's something I believe in. And so here you are, you have your paper and you're standing there. Now you're about to go get rich. Where did you go? where did you go to go get rich?
I discovered sales is what happened. My brother got me a job with, this is funny, Jenny Craig Weight Loss. And I walked in and they gave me a job. And they, after about 3 days of working, just like working the front desk, the owner, it was a franchise, and the owner said, I think you'd be good in sales. And that was the start of it all. She began to train me in how to sell the program and said, you can make however much you want. She said, I'm going to pay you commission. And that lit my fire. I was like, yes. So she taught me how to sell and I started making commission. I said, you're telling me I can make however much I want? She said, yeah. Oh, I ate it up and I loved it. I loved the challenge of sales. I loved the mind work of sales and trying to figure out the right words to say and the right way to influence people and the right way to motivate others. I loved it, ate it up and started selling. And then went from that job into from one sales job to the next. The independence and the ability to earn what I wanted was so appealing to me.
Yeah, sales is a entrance into human behavior, learning intricacies of human behavior, including body language, everything. You learn how to read little twitches. As a salesperson, you learn how to see how the posture change from what you say, and you become a student, if you will, of human behavior as a sales individual. And once you begin to learn some of those little things, you can utilize it and become really, really successful. So here you are, you became rich. you have your husband. And now when you are about to contemplating marriage, I know those thoughts that are dancing within your head from that Christmas. How did you manage that?
That's such a good question and so interesting. And I know I was crazy in love with my husband, and he was very different than anyone else I had ever met or dated.
Well, he did buy you those tickets and that shirt at the concert.
But, you know, I don't really know how I bypassed all of that fear, other than, like I say, I think the Lord was working. And, but we had been married for 4 years by the time the Lord got a hold of us.
Yeah.
And so I did live with a lot of that fear for those first 4 years of marriage, until God got a hold of us and he said, "You trust me. Don't worry about him. I've got him, but you trust me." And so there was a shift there for sure. But the initial marriage, I must have just pushed everything to the side, because because it didn't go away. It was there.
It'll be there. And because, again, until it's made known and you begin to deal with it. When it did come up, because you're 4 years out, and even after the Lord comes in, you know, sometimes the thoughts will try to sneak back in, and then you have to deal with it. Within that space of the 4 years, how did you manage that? Because I'm sure, Christy, that is, I was there in some of those things. And as a pastor, I know some of those minefields that people walked into. How were you guys navigating with each other at that, between that 4 years?
We were really having a lot of fun. We were traveling like crazy. We did have, you know, disposable income. We were traveling like crazy. We were doing lots of fun things.
And yeah, you were rich. Remember, you made that statement, "I'm going to be rich."
And so, I will say, my husband is such a wonderful man, and he treated me, I mean, still treats me like a queen. And so things were really good. And he was very good at calming my fears as far as his level of loyalty. And he's not a man that would flirt or make me feel insecure in any way. And he's always been so good at making me believe that I am the most beautiful woman in whatever room we're in to him.
See, I need to talk to him. Bring him in.
It's a gift.
I need some advice. I need to talk to him. So here you are, you've gone through. So now we are going into the arena where you have your tension or your encounter with God. Because as a young woman, you read, you know, in the beginning and lost your mind. And then your friends were not really able to deal with the answers of your questions that you had. How did that process happen, and who did it happen to first, between you and your husband? Was it you? How did that encounter happen, where you had that meeting, if you will, the "where are you," as I said in the beginning?
Yeah, it's so interesting, because it feels to me, when I look back at that time, that every Christian in the world and everything Christian related was like hidden behind a wall from me. I didn't know anybody who followed Jesus. I didn't know anybody who loved Jesus. I didn't know people that went to church. It was just all really hidden. I was blind to it. But what happened is, I was selling advertising for the Fox television station here in Lexington that I worked with, who I just loved. She was a barrel of fun. We always had a great time. And she had a past. I mean, she had a past. This girl was probably 30 years old, and you would have thought she was 75 from the stories that she had. If they was out there, she had done it. And I'm talking about all the sins, right?
Yeah.
She got saved. She found Jesus and gave her life to the Lord. And she comes into work, and she's blah, 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 what in the world? I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. And so we would still go out to our lunches and do our thing. And I would ask her, "What is going on? What's happened to you? Why are you going to church? That's so weird," right? Yeah. She would tell me all the things that were happening in her life. "Oh, my marriage is improving. I'm doing better with my kids. I'm happier. This is what I learned. That's what I learned." And the interesting thing was, a theologian, right? She was brand new. I would ask her questions. She would say, "I don't know, but I'll tell you what I do know." Blah, right? She was sharing out of her own excitement. And it was contagious. I was mesmerized by everything that was going on with her. And when I saw her, older than me and more sinful than me in my estimation, right? And the Lord was interested in her and saving her and doing this work in her. it just really made me curious. Like, well, maybe I was wrong. Maybe it's not too late for me. Maybe God does, you know, maybe he is interested in people like me. And so I began to, I got real curious, and I would start asking my husband, do you think we should go to church? And he would say, nah. He'd say, after we have kids, we'll go to church. And I'd go, oh, okay. You know, and then I would ask again after another week, what do you think we should go to church? He'd say, no, we like to sleep in on Sunday morning. And I'm like, yeah, that's true. We do. We like to sleep in, you know, but there was something in me that was getting hungrier and hungrier.
Yeah.
And at the same time, though, I really needed my husband to get on board with me, and he wasn't getting on board. So I just kept sitting back and sitting back until one night. It was a Saturday night, and I can picture it in my mind, and we were sitting on the couch watching television, and the urge was too strong to deny. And I said, I think I want to go to church tomorrow. I said, do you want to go with me? And he said, no. And I said, okay. And I called my friend, and I said, I want to come to church with you. Like, where do I go? What do I do? And she filled me in. And for the first time, I sensed that the Lord was saying to me, this is between you and I. Don't worry about him. This is between you and I. So I got up the next morning and I went. And I was saved in the car on the way to the building, which is still so amazing to me. God is so amazing and powerful. He didn't need anybody else. He saved me on the way. And of course, I didn't know what was happening at the time. It wasn't until later that I realized kind of what happened in that car, but it was a beautiful thing. I just began to talk to God and say, I would really like to know you. And I thought it was all about the church. I said, Lord, I've been to churches before. They're boring and the music is bad and the people are weird. And so would you make this church the right church for me, where I can understand things and where I can fit in? And I sensed that he was saying to me, this isn't about the church, Christy. This is between you and I. Are you ready to make this the right church?
Yeah.
And so I cried all the way to the church. And when I got there and the pastor stood up to preach, he said, I'm going to talk to you out of the book of Genesis today. And for any of you who don't know, that's the very first book in the Bible. And I felt like he was reading my mail, right? Like, why would he say that? I didn't think there was anybody in the world like me. I thought I was the only one that wouldn't be able to open the Bible and find what he was talking about. But he spoke to me. That's the first book. And I thought, well, that's the only one I could have found. So thankful that you're there. And I think, Ken, for the first time, I understood what he was saying. I understood the story. I understood the principles. I understood the meaning of what he was talking about. And of course, it was later, it was about 2 or 3 weeks later, that the Lord brought me across the scripture that says, the man without the Spirit, you know, the word is foolishness to him. The things of God are foolishness to him, but with the Spirit, there's understanding. And I thought, that must be what happened in the car.
That's what happened in the car.
Yeah.
I try to explain that to people, that religion has taken God and put him in a box and done injustice. But when we were disconnected, the spirit of man tells us everything about that individual began to be corrupted. His spirit is corrupted. His soul is corrupted. His body is corrupted. Now sicknesses and diseases, the earth is corrupted. Everything from that decision became corrupted. In that corruption, the disconnect happened. And the disconnect was the man's spirit was disconnected from his God. And so that's when he began to lose his way. And that's why when one of my favorite part of the scripture, the Bible, is when God is still sitting there waiting for the man, even though he knew that the decision that he made, he was still waiting there. And he said the question that I said in the onset, where are you? And it was the man's response that was very fascinating. I was afraid. And so that's the creation of the second kingdom, that is full of fear and guided by fear. If you look at what's out there in the world and all their religious system is based on fear, that you're going to go to hell and all this type of stuff. That's not what God came to tell. He came to tell the people, for God so loved the world, I love you. I don't want you. I want you. And because he wants us, he created a way by which we could reconnect. Mm-hmm. And that's when he said, you must become born again. Why? Because we are born in this natural kingdom that we call the earth. But when you become born again, you have to be born to get into the next kingdom. And so you can't do it unless becoming born again. But what happens when we're in this kingdom here, in this natural kingdom, we have a new spirit and all that stuff that when we become born. And so when you're born again in the new kingdom, it's the same thing. He gives you a new spirit. You become this new creature. And that conduit is what he needs to hook back up. And when you have that conduit, when you begin to look at the Bible and read it as an individual, not as a church, he's not even come for the church, you know, came for the individual. And the Bible tells us he knows us by name. So that when we reconnect, that's when we start having the encounters, those deep prayer, all the things that he began to show us, because we are now connected specifically back to him, and he can communicate to us without any quote-unquote hindrance that is in the other kingdom. They have to go through all kinds of stuff. He's this God. He says, my sheep hear my voice. They know my voice because we're connected.
Yes.
So here you are. You got connected before your husband. And you are now going into, I'm sure you're going to go past Genesis and then go a little further out. As you began to look into the word and so forth and looking at your life and hanging out with your friends, what were those changes that you began to see in your life in relationship to your new relationship?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my life turned upside down and has never been the same again. That was 24 years ago. And I had no idea, you know, because like I said, those things were hidden from me. It felt like a whole new world opened up. Like, mm-hmm. There's Christian music, there's Christian books, there's, you know, church, all of this stuff. My mind was blown. Like, where has all of this been my whole life? And why didn't anybody tell me?
Yeah.
And I think that was one of my biggest things when I was first saved is, Lord, why hasn't anybody told me? And then I found that one of my close friends was a follower of Christ, and she was shocked. When she found out that I had gotten saved and baptized and everything, she said, Christy, I just assumed you knew. I mean, you're a good person. And doesn't everybody know? I mean, you grew up, you know, in the United States, right? So she felt bad. She had never shared the gospel with me. She had never talked to me about the Lord. And I said, Mary, I had no idea. As far as I know, no one ever shared the gospel with me. And so one of the first things the Lord asked me to do was to write down my testimony and write down what it was like to go from darkness to light. And he wanted me to share that. So almost immediately, some ladies from my church said, we want you to come to our meeting on this night and share with us what happened to you. I go, okay, you know, mm-hmm. I'm a communications major. I got this. So I go and I sit around just a conference table with, I don't know, maybe 10 ladies. And I tell them what my salvation experience was, what happened to me. And they're all fascinated. And so they tell somebody else and they say, will you come and share with us? And I go, yeah. And I go and sit around a conference table. And that happens maybe 3 times at different churches with different groups of ladies. And the 4th time someone asks me, I go, yeah, I'll come. And I come. And when I get there, the woman meets me at the door and she says, do you want a clip-on mic or a handheld mic? And I said, why would I need a microphone? And she opens up the gym door and there must have been 3 women in there.
Wow.
Hey, wait a minute. Nobody's signed up for this. I thought we were going to sit around a conference table. I said, oh my word. So that was my first introduction into really public speaking. But I'll tell you what, Ken, you know what happened? My whole life until that point, I had never, like we talked about earlier, I had never played an instrument. I had never been gifted in athletics. I didn't sing or dance. I never felt like I had anything special about me. I didn't have any gifts that I knew of, you know, just, you know, and that was always kind of a sore spot. I came down off that stage that day. And I said, there it is. Yep. This is what I was made to do, is to speak and share, teach, whatever you might call it. And I knew it. The energy that I felt, it was a high like I had never experienced. And I thought, this is what I was built for. This is what I was made for. And it's such a thrill. I was 28 years old.
Wow.
I was 28 years old when I got saved, 28 years old when I discovered that I had a gift.
Yeah, that's powerful, powerful testimony. Yeah. And when that happens, there is a connectiveness that is so deep that you cannot explain it. I remember when that happened to me, and I was in teaching in one of the Caribbean islands. And I tell people, like, I can't preach, but I can teach. I know that's my gift.
Yeah.
And I went to it, my pastor, who is a serious preacher. I love watching him, but I can't do that. That would just make me fall over and break everything in me. But I go on precept by precept. I'm turning and going and breaking it down and so forth. And I remember when, after we finished, I just said to the folks, hey, guys, anyone need prayer, just come on up. I'll pray for you. I was just saying, just come on, let's pray, you know. And just people pouring down the aisle. And I was like, whoa. And I remember when I started to pray, I said, I turned my back and I said, God, I don't know nothing about these people. This is exactly what I said. I said, I don't know nothing about these people. This is your people. You have permission from me to use me to speak to them, because I don't know nothing about these people. When I said that and I turned around and began to do what I lay hands on people, he started showing me everything about them. I saw people doing things that are absolutely crazy. I saw these couple of women that were sitting in the corner that were involved in witchcraft. Started to show me and expose all in this church. And I remember I touched this woman's head to pray for her. And I see her, I saw the electronics. And so I saw her brain falling back and forth. And I said, oh, I'm closing her eyes. And now he's going to explain to me what I see from my knowledge. And I looked at her and I said, oh, you're senile. And because I had my eyes closed when I was praying for her, and I said, oh, you're senile, because I saw a field of electronics. And as he's telling me, he's showing me, so that I know that when I look at that, he knew that I would know what that means, a field. And I see those charges not getting to where it needs to be and dropping and stuff like that. And I'm closing my eyes. And I said, and I'm looking at the field in the vision, looking and saying, oh, you're senile. You've lost your mind. And I'm just talking and my eyes closed. And he healed all of those people, all kinds of stuff. Those women with the witchcraft, I remember. He told me to tell them everything he told me to tell them. I told them, I said, if you don't do that, you, and this is what I felt impressed, that you would die in 3 days. And those ladies cleaned up their house real quick and came back, and he showed me everything. But yeah, when you are there and connected, there is this power, there's this knowing that supersedes everything, and you know that you are with, you're one with God. So, and that's when I understood, when Jesus makes a statement, whatever I see the Father do, I do.
Yes.
Whenever I see him, whatever he says to me to speak, and that was what I was doing. I understood what he meant. And you, when you came off of the stage and that feeling, you said it, you understood, because there was a connectiveness with you, your divine purpose, why you were here. There's nothing like knowing why you're here. Every one of us came with an assignment. So here you are. You're only on your own. We're hour in and we haven't even started yet. So you're on your own. You're going to church. You're doing your thing. Hubby is home. You want to come now. How did that transition happen? Because it's going to lead into your ministry of marriage and so forth. How did that, and relationship? What was happening with you first? I know the changes in you, but what was happening with both of you guys in that time of your discovery, getting to know who God is, but his resistance?
Well, you know, when I talked before about how my mom accepted my dad where he was and didn't try to push him to do things that, you know, were outside of his comfort zone, I didn't get that memo. So I deemed myself Holy Spirit Junior, and I went into action mode, and I was going to convert that man, you know? And come to find out, Ken, he knew a lot of this stuff. The very first night that the pastor came over to talk to me about baptism and to explain things to me, my husband starts answering some of the questions that the pastor's bringing up. And I am like, floored. I said, you know this stuff? Because, yeah, I went to church with my grandma all growing up. And I'm like, so I was headed to hell in a handbasket and you were just going to sit by and watch? Wait, what's with these people? Nobody cared about eternity. Nobody. Now, luckily, we have a God in heaven who cares, right? That I don't need any of y'all's help. I'll take care of myself.
Oh, that's so funny.
So after about 3 months of me going to church every time those doors opened, because I tell you what, I had a hunger and thirst for the word. I felt like I was 28 years behind.
Yeah.
I really needed to, you know, dive in. I felt like the picture I saw in my mind was that my whole body was filled with the world from 28 years of soaking up the world's teaching and the world's wisdom and the world's way of thinking. And I had to flush all of that out to get God's way in me. And I think of it like a pitcher of water, right? That has mud in it. And you start pouring, the only way to get the mud out is by pouring more clean water in it. And the more clean water you pour in it, right? The mud begins to leave the pitcher. And eventually you'll have a pitcher of clean water. And that was how I saw myself. I've got to pour in more of God's truth, more of God's truth until the world gets out of me. And so and after about 3 months, my husband looked at me and said, you know, I probably ought to start going with you. And I said, and he said, yeah, otherwise they're going to think you're single. I said, well, all righty then, whatever it takes, right? Whatever it takes. So he started with me. And it was after that, I remember one night that I don't know what I was giving him a hard time about or what I was preaching about to him. I don't know. But he looked at me and he said, Christy, you've got to stop. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, I don't care how close I get to the Lord. My walk with Jesus is never going to look like yours. So you got to stop pushing me to do it the way you do it, right? I have my own relationship with God and it's going to be mine. And so you just, you know, kind of get on your side of the street and I'll handle mine. I said, oh, okay. And it was probably one of the best things he ever said to me. It's absolutely right, right? Each one of us have our unique relationship with the Lord that reflects our personality and our background and our ways, and it's not the same. And I wanted him to look like me. I wanted him to do it my way. It's ridiculous. And to this day, his walk is very different than mine, but he has a wonderful, beautiful connection with the Lord. And God was good to draw us together as we both sought him.
And that's a powerful story. So you guys are now... He set you straight.
Yes.
He said, he's like, this is, you know, and so you're moving, as he said, he set you straight and you're now moving. How did you navigate to that of relationship? What was happening in your life that escorted you in that direction where you became a coach and you started studying and stuff like that? What was it that you noticed that began to happen to you to cause you to walk in that direction?
Well, God has been so good to us to teach my husband and I and walk with us to create a godly marriage and family that we didn't know how to do. We didn't see that in action. He did not grow up in a Christian home. I did not grow up in a Christian home. And so it was all unknown to us. But the Lord was faithful to bring people and books, resources, mentors, the church to teach us and show us the way. And so, you know, we had 4 kids and we have, you know, now been married almost 30 years. But about 3 years ago, some of the rough places in our marriage, some of the places of strife began to build, right? And they're building. And so we're generally happy, but there's some rough places, right? And we go to marriage conferences. I read marriage books. You know, we're doing things. We even went to marriage counseling at one point, but you know what I found out? I found out that nobody gets happier by complaining about their spouse for an hour a week. That's what I suffered. And so that wasn't helpful. I read the books and everything. Nothing was working. Nothing was hitting the spots that I needed it to until I found a book by Laura Doyle called The Empowered Wife. And when I read that book, I began to see where the problem stemmed from. And it wasn't what I thought. See, for many years, I had been thinking, this guy needs to change. This guy needs some work, right?
Yeah.
If he would do X, Y, and Z, then we'd all live happily ever after, right? But what happened with the book is that the finger turned back at me. And I began to look at myself and my part in the broken places in our relationship. And I began to see the ways that I was being controlling and disrespectful and ungrateful. And I began to see the power that I have as a woman to set the tone and the temperature of our household.
Yep.
And you've heard the saying, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
Ain't nobody happy, yeah.
I found out that is very true. that women are powerful and influential to set the tone of their household. And I found out that if I stayed in this place where I thought he needed to change in order for me to be happy, I was creating a victim mindset. I was creating a place of hopelessness for myself because I recognized I had no control over him. I can only control me. And so if it was up to him to change for me to be happy, I was hopeless. I was sunk. But if, on the other hand, I had power and I could make changes in our relationship, then there's a way forward. Yeah. So that's what I found out. And I began to make those changes. And as I began to change and show up as a different woman, he began to respond to me like that guy I remember at the concert, right?
I'm going to, all you folks that are listening to us, especially the ladies, I'm going to give you guys some insight right now. One of the most powerful gifts that a woman have, gift that she has, is the power of influence. And you don't need to dominate a man. You just need to recognize that you have been given the power of influence as a woman. We first witnessed that in the Garden of Eden.
Yes.
That was the very first instant that we saw the power of a woman's influence over the man. And many women try to beat up the man into submission. And when you do that, he'll repel all day long, every day, every second. But when you began, as Christy was talking about, I started looking at yourself and seeing the power that is you. As you change you and make the adjustments within you, your sphere of influence goes out and it begins to make the changes in the man right next to you. And he doesn't even know what's going on.
You're exactly right.
You know that this woman, that power that has given to her as one of the most powerful things between a relationship in a relationship with human being, the power of influence. And there's nothing. A woman can change a man with a touch on his hand and his shoulders while the whole world is losing their mind. And he's up there fired up and everyone's looking at him fired up, and she can touch him and calm that beast in a second. She didn't even say a word because of her power of influence. And so I want to encourage you guys, especially the women, learn who you are. He'll be okay. You have something that he doesn't have. And learn to become a woman of influence. And you will see the children change. Everyone will change because you are walking in your power. So here you are. The reality of that plank in your eyes, as the scripture says, you started chipping away at that plank that was in your eyes. The influence, the power of influence began to make the changes that you were demanding. You wanted to happen in your house. How did that now begin to lead you into the arena of a coach? Because as you begin to bring the data in, the data now has been lodged into you and you believe the data. And as you're now believing the data, you're using the data to change you. How did it change and led you to becoming a coach? Mm-hmm. What was that guidance that you received and says, this is where I want you to be for a little while?
Yeah. So I read the book and I began to implement the things that I was learning. And I saw changes immediately in the way my husband responded to me. And the book said that we mirror one another, right? Mm-hmm. So the way that I show up really affects the way my husband shows up back to me. And I saw that happening. And I saw changes begin to take place. And so I worked like that for a while. And then I felt stuck. Like, okay, there's more, but I don't know how to get there. So I hired a coach. I hired a relationship coach who was trained in these six intimacy skills, and she began to help me and guide me and lead me and support me through the changes that I was trying to make, right? Because I had some habits. I had some bad habits that I'd been working on for 25 years, right?
Yeah.
No one ever taught me how to be successful in love. I had lots of ideas about success and how to be successful as the world would define it, but no one teaches us. We've never had a class, right? On how to be successful in relationships and love. And that's what this was for me. And so she supported me through that. And one of the things she did that was so helpful is she helped me see my husband in a new way. When I spoke, him and said, oh, I hear that your husband really loves you. I hear that your husband wants you to come and sit with him and watch television. I hear. And she would pick out every little thing. And I began to see all the ways that my husband was loving me that I had been ignoring or blowing off, maybe because it wasn't my idea of what love would be like. And so she really helped me. But I tell you what, from the very first phone call I had with her, I said, I want to do what she's doing. I want to support women like that. I want to guide women like that. I want to, you know, I support this mission to end world divorce because I know the pain of divorce. I know what it is on the couple. I know what it is on the children, and I want to stop that. And I know how important marriage is to the Lord. And so for all of those reasons, I said, Lord, this is the way. I see that this is the way you're taking me. This is the way you're leading me.
That is awesome. Go into for those that are listening, I want you to go into those steps because some of those may be here and that are listening to us, me here. We're going to send you guys to her because it's important that you get a chance to bring the coach. And I said to people, when you bring in a coach, you're bringing in a different perspective, more knowledge, more insight, all of those things that you're going to get on a personal basis. And when you have those things on a personal basis, you're more inclined to be focused. You're more inclined to be expecting. You're more inclined to be obedient to the instructions than having a vast auditorium with everyone and whatever. But when you have that one-on-one, that individual is a skilled questioning our questioner knows how to identify you, look at you, see where you are, and then be able to guide you from there. Just briefly, talk about those principles, if you will, relationship principles that she began to show you and teach you that helped you to navigate through the maze that you were stuck in and lost. And I want you guys to listen to her because what we'll do is provide all of her information. And a divorce is a destroyer. And this information that she's about to give to you could help you not to be destroyed. And so we want you guys to get in her space. I'm going to provide every single thing, all her links and all the everything for you to get to her. And I want to admonish you that are in situations where your relationship is disintegrating, there is hope. There is hope. And I got someone who can help you out with some of that. So talk to us about these principles that your mentor began to whisper to you and change your life.
I wish you could see my paper right now because I was writing, there is hope, right when you said, there is hope. That's exactly what I was writing. Oh my goodness. So I always tell the women that come to me, I say, you married a great guy. Yeah. And do you know how I know you married a great guy? Because you picked him, right? You chose him and you saw all of these wonderful things in him. And he saw those in you too. But now over time, right, with lots of responsibility and bills and children and jobs and all of the things that life throws at us, those things may have gotten buried and they may have gone missing, but they're still there on the inside of him and you. So part of what we do together as a coach and the client is dig up those qualities, right? And when I begin to show up as the girl of fun and light that my husband met in the tire store 32 years ago, then I begin to bring out that guy that I fell in love with too. And so the first place that I start with every woman is that just rediscovery of self. And what do I love? What do I enjoy? You know, because we do get buried underneath responsibility and we forget to have fun. And we just start being this taskmaster, especially as a woman. I've got to get the laundry done. I've got to get the house clean. I've got to take care of the kids. And life becomes kind of woo, right? And the stress piles up and we no longer even have a smile to share with our husband and our family. And miserable people do not have happy relationships. That's just a fact, right? Yeah. Happy people have happy relationships. And so we've got to find your joy again, sister. We've got to find your joy. And so I want to encourage the ladies out there to think about, what do you enjoy? Make a list of things that you enjoy. Do you like to get in a hot bath? Do you like to go for a walk? Do you like to have coffee with a friend or call your sister on the phone, play video games on your phone? What do you enjoy? What brings a smile to your face? Do you know I have a whole playlist on Spotify that I call my happy music?
Yeah.
And it's all kinds of music that makes me want to get up and dance and smile. And so I can play that music while I'm making the bed and doing the laundry, and I can turn my mood around so that when my husband comes home, he can find a joyful, happy wife instead of the wife that he used to come home to, who would start complaining the minute he walked in the door. You won't believe what the kids have done, and this is a mess, and I can't do this, and this is too much, and I'm overwhelmed. No wonder he worked late. That's all I'm going to say about that, right? He worked late, and then he sat in front of the television set because he didn't want what I had to offer.
Yeah.
Oops, right? But I didn't know. I didn't know. But when I started to make myself happy and stop waiting for him to make me happy, to take it on as my personal job, right? I guarantee you, if we took a poll right now among husbands and said, would you rather that the dishes were done and clean when you got home from work, or that your wife took that time to read her favorite mystery novel and you came home, she was happy to see you? He would say, girl, read the book. Girl, take the walk. Right? Our husbands want us happy. When we're happy, they feel successful. And when we're unhappy, they feel like a failure. And over time, ladies, they might just give up. They might just decide that you are unpleasable.
Yeah, it's a tough lesson. As you said, you have to look at self. And when you do, it changes everything. You guys have, like I said, my mom was like 4 and change. My dad was 6'2", 6'4". When she came in the room and say, Kenrick, my father. And we would watch this dynamic with this woman, the power of influence that she had. It was something else. And she understood it. And so I used to watch that and see. But as I mentioned, the very first picture of that is in Genesis chapter 3. Just go read it for yourself, guys, and you'll see what the power of influence can do to a man. Mm-hmm. And so when you use that power to steer your man in the right direction, it'll change everything. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited. We've had so much time that she spent with us, Christy. Her time with us, her precious time, and I'm honored that she's here. And for those that are in marriage and in a deep relationship with another and wanting it to work, even if you it's gone too far, trust me, guys, I've seen stuff that you like look and go, wow, what happened? Mm-hmm. But you have to remember that when you're also working with within the realm of your God, He can change heart, because it says in scriptures that all souls are mine, He says. He says, all the heart of the king is in my hand, and I can move it like the stream of water wherever I choose. And He does that because His will is marriage. He wants us to have a little piece of heaven on the earth.
Yes.
Of learning communication and learning about each other and delving deeper with each other. And He wants you to experience that with someone that we have the title of, we call a husband. And I know that many of you had all kinds of beliefs about marriage, but when it's done with love, and love is hard work. Love sometimes causes one's, to surrender much. Jesus tells His husbands in Ephesians, the book of Ephesians, to love your wife as you love yourself. Now, if your husband don't love himself, you'll know what he's at. But I want to tell you about that power of influence. You can change him. You just don't know you can. Don't give up. There is hope. And all you need to know, the scripture says that hope is an earnest expectation of something, not the wishy type, wishy work kind of hope. Hope, when we read the Greek and study the word, it means an earnest expectation of something to be done. Now, when you topple that with your faith, your belief in what you want, there's nothing that will stop you from getting what you need and what you want. So it's still up to you.
Yes.
But I have a guide, and we're going to provide everything for you to have access to her so that she can guide you, those of you that are stuck, so that you can come forward and have that beautiful marriage, and you can report to her that you are now unstuck. And so Christy, we want to thank you so much for coming and spending your time with us here at Threads of Enlightenment. Thank you. Such an honorable visit. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was a real treat. So fun.
Thank you.